Welcome into the Towel Boys. I'm Tyler Bischoff over at Mountain West Connection. He is Mike Grimala over at RunRebs.com. Today, we are talking a little bit about UNLV's win over Wyoming. We're talking about Dwayne Morgan, but also we are going to fawn over Pat McCall, as everybody else loves to do. Probably talk a little bit about defense, since they did a really good job on Larry Nance. Also going to get to standings in the Mountain West Tournament and matchups, because UNLV, pretty much they're going to be the 7 seed is essentially what it looks like. But what matchups we think will be the best and what matchups we think will be the worst in that tournament. And then Chris Wood and how his game against Wyoming is the perfect example of what Chris Wood has been this year. And kind of talk a little bit about San Diego State as well. But let's start with Dwayne Morgan. I don't know that it's a good thing that he had 8 points on 3 of 8 shooting, 2 rebounds, and everybody was excited about how he played.
Well, I mean, just looking through his stats, he before the Utah State game, when he was in double figures out of nowhere, he 8 points on Saturday, but he hadn't scored 8 points in a game since January 10th against San Jose State. And, I mean, and that's San Jose State at home. So if you want to even go back further, he hadn't scored 8 points since he scored 23 versus St. Catherine, which is also in the column of not really a real game.
So basically he's had his best 2 games of his career.
10 points against Albany on November 29th. That's the only other time he scored 8 points in a game this year, besides those two, you know, St. Catherine and San Jose State, until the last 2 games when he's looked pretty competent.
Yeah, so it's last 2 games, 21 points on 9 of 14 shooting, and he's played 41 minutes and only picked up 5 fouls. Like, that's a ratio where he could play a whole game and not foul out.
Well, and which is a huge key, because I think the main thing with Morgan this year is he's just looked so, I don't want to say nervous, but like skid. You know, he's this guy that's playing way too fast and not really settling in. He's very amped up, and really the only cure for that is, you know, more minutes and letting someone settle down and like letting him stay on the court for a little bit. But with the way that he fouls, and they couldn't play him for more than a few minutes at a time, which just sort of feeds into the problem of him trying to do too much when he gets out there. And once you stop fouling, maybe they can give him a chance to let him run a little bit and see what happens.
Dave Rice said after the game that he thought Dwayne Morgan, that he's kind of slowed down a little bit more, that he was sped up a lot in the last 2 games. He's slowed down. Did you see that? Because, like, last night's game, I didn't think he was slowed down anymore. I just thought he was actually making quality offensive moves.
Well, I think those two things go together. There were a couple times when he caught the ball in the post, or the mid-post, and just from seeing him play in the first 25 games of the season, I immediately said, he's going to turn around. He's just going to rise up and shoot this ball, because that's one of his moves. He gets the ball. He sort of does like a half face up, and then he just rises up and lets it go from the mid range. And he doesn't make that shot. But a couple of times in the past few games, he's turned, and instead of just immediately shooting it, he's, you know, bounced it twice, gotten into the lane, and taken sort of a little half hook shot. And he's made a couple of those. So I mean, that maybe is an example of some patience that he's having in offense. It's not like he's immediately shooting the ball, but he's kind of working it and seeing if he can get a better shot.
The way Dwayne Morgan played in the first half, Jordan Cornish had like a 2-minute spurt where he was really good. He had a good assist and knocked down a 3 as well. And then I thought Cody Doolin, coming off ball screens, was as good as he's been in probably like 10 games, 15 games or so. If they get those 3 guys to play pretty well, I mean, Who can UNLV not beat in the Mountain West tournament?
I said all year, like, I think that their talent level is up there with any team in the Mountain West. They're obviously a lot thinner than most teams, but if they can get everyone playing well at the same time, UNLV is a tough out.
Like, if you get Dwayne Morgan to be competent for 15 minutes and you get Cody Doolin to actually get in the lane off of ball screens and create some stuff, and Jordan Cornish knocks down some 3s, and then you have Pat McCall being as good as he's been, and you get good Chris Wood, and Good Luck Okonobo is blocking shots. Like, to me, there's no reason to think that group, even without Rashad Vaughn, can't do something in the Mountain West tournament. Like, that if you get that, you're not losing to Air Force or Nevada. You're not losing to New Mexico. And to me, I mean, you can beat Boise State. You can beat a lot of the teams. Now, can you do it 3 days and or 3 days and three games in 3 days, 4 games in 4 days? I don't know, but I certainly think, like, what I saw last night from sort of the role players on this team, if they can get that maybe a little bit more, like, there is some potential for the Mountain West Tournament. I don't think they're going to win it by any means, but there is some potential to win a couple games and, you know, get people's hopes up at the very least.
I would agree with you, but I think the reason that, I mean, all three or four of those role players, how many games have we seen this season where they're all, where they all play well, and they all fill their role on the same night? It has been more than probably one or two games. So asking those guys to do that 4 times in 4 days, not sure if that can happen. But I do agree with you that when those players are filling their specific roles is probably when they play best and when the team is at their best. They don't need Dwayne Morgan to try and take over the offense when he's in the game. They need him to play good defense, which the coaches have said they've liked his defense all year. And they need him to, you know, get into the paint, not turn the ball over, maybe score a few buckets in the post. I mean, that's what they need from him. They need energy, they need rebounding, and they need some defense. They don't need him to come in and take over the game at this point in his career. I think that if he can sort of slide into that role, I mean, there's only a couple games left, but if the light sort of goes on and he can slide into that role, it definitely improves their chances heading into the conference tournament.
Like, when he's in the game, he sort of does try to take over offensively, at least when he gets it, because if you look at his usage rate, it's like the third highest on the team behind Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood, because he doesn't play a lot of minutes, and when he's in, he typically shoots when he catches
it. If he gets it, it's going up, for the most part.
So, like, I don't know. Yeah, I agree. He doesn't need to even look to shoot as often, but you mentioned role players, and looking at UNLV's next game against San Diego State, that was probably the worst game for the role players on the team. That was, you know, you had three players score all your points, basically. Rashad had 17, Pat had 15, and Goodluck had 11, but you got two from Chris Wood, Cody Doolin scored two, and his was like a layup in the last 10 seconds. Kendrick didn't score, Dwayne Morgan didn't score, Jordan Cornish didn't score. Like, that was the opposite of last night, their game against San Diego State, where the role players just didn't do anything. Like, it just, they just didn't show up. It was a three-man team against San Diego State. So that's sort of, I would expect to see that more than I would expect to see all the role players play well, which is why I would have no expectation for UNLV to win the tournament. But I do think, hey, they could beat Air Force and then they could upset Boise State in the second round or whatever it is.
Do you think the coaching staff has done a good job this season of defining the roles for those players? Do you think that when Dwayne Morgan, you know, comes into a game, he knows exactly what they want him to do? I feel like that's the sort of a trademark of well-coached teams, is by this point in the year, you've got guys that know, hey, when I come in on these two particular plays, I can have an open three-point shot and they want me to take it. Or on this particular play, you know, if I can get to this spot, you know, I'll get a pretty good, you know, mid-range shot or something. Like, you know, I feel like well-coached teams have role players who know exactly what the coaches want for them while they're in there for those 4 minutes or those 5 minutes. Do you think, like, Dwayne Morgan has a sense of that at this point?
Dwayne Morgan, no. Like, I don't think he does, even after his last two games. But, like, I think Jordan Cornish knows his role really well. Like, I think Jordan Cornish knows exactly what he's supposed to do. I think Jalon Kendrick, he shoots a few more threes than you like, but I think Jalon Kendrick has, like, he knows what his objective is when he's on the court. And then Pat McCaws has changed, but I think early and as his role has expanded, Pat has always understood, okay, this is what I'm being asked to do now. So I think I look at the team, and I think everybody kind of knows their role. I think Dwayne Morgan's the biggest exception to that. I think he's the one guy that you look at and say, based on his play, he doesn't look like he knows what he's supposed to be doing, or he doesn't look like he's been coached very well.
Yeah, I think that the usage rate kind of backs that up. I'm sure the coaches don't want him being, you know, the offense, the focus of the offense when he's in the game, but he sort of takes it upon himself to do that. I feel like maybe, you know, 2 years down the road, Dwayne Morgan could be ready for that. But right now, they really don't need that from him.
Pat McCaw's awesome, right? Like, is there what's the worst thing he's done this year?
I have to think.
Like, I know the only time I've heard Dave Rice complain was when he tried to throw the alley-oop from half court in the last 5 minutes against St. Catharines.
Yeah, That was that St. Catharines. I think he had like 8 or 9 turnovers. Like that was a high turnover game for him. So I guess maybe he got a little careless with the ball against St. Catharines. That might be the worst thing he's done this year.
Like he's been awesome, and it's like everybody, like as we've watched him, like his role's expanded, but it's like there's never been something where it's like, oh, Pat McCaw sucked. Like he's had a couple of nights where he hasn't shot the ball well. But it's never been like, okay, Pat McCaw's not good. Like, every game, it's Pat McCaw's the best player on this team is what you come away thinking almost after every game.
He's the best player on the team. Would it surprise you if he was Mountain West Player of the Year next year?
No, it wouldn't. I wouldn't bet on him to get it next year. I would bet on him to get it before he leaves. But if UNLV is good next year, then I think there's a good chance he gets it, because I think there's a good chance he's the best player. He could be the leading scorer on this team next year very easily. He could average like 16 points and 6 assists and 5 rebounds next year, couldn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
like there's nothing to say he couldn't do that. Plus, he'd be defending the other team's best player.
I could see the points and the assists maybe even higher, just depending on the role that he takes in the offense. I mean, if he's the guy that they have, running the point and with the ball in his hands all the time, I could even see those numbers going a little bit higher.
So Mountain West, at least past years, have named a first, second, and third team. I don't know if that's changing since they changed that media doesn't vote. It's just a coach's thing now. But he's not going to make first team this year. But I think he's for sure a second or third teamer. I would have him on the second team as of now, especially since Rashad Vaughn has gone down.
I mean, are there 6 guards better than him in the Mountain West?
You got Derek Marks, you've got Jalen Moore at Utah State, and then outside of those two, I don't know that there's a guard that you say, yes, he's better than Pat McCaw.
Bayerano?
Bayerano's been okay, but he hasn't been as efficient as he was last year.
No, but
he's been good. His efficiency's just gone down this year.
I'd probably take Pat McCaw over him this year, but I think name recognition and just the voting, I think that Bayerano would probably finish ahead of him.
Yeah.
I'd have to look at the numbers for the Fresno State guys. Marvell Harris, someone like that.
Marvell Harris has had pretty good numbers, I could feasibly understand Marvell Harris getting a second team spot over McCaw or whatever, but you can't definitively say
no,
Marvell Harris.
I
think he's a lock for at least third team. I think he gets to second team. Do you think he makes the all defensive team? Because there's one all defensive Mountain West team.
Or do
they just give that to all 5 San Diego State guys?
let me take a look at Patrick McCaw's steals. 1.4 steals per game. That's really the only number that I would think that they would look at. I don't know. Has he developed that kind of defensive reputation yet?
I don't know that he has, because UNLV hasn't been a great defensive team. So I don't know that he gets there, but I don't know. I guess I haven't paid enough attention to who the best defensive players in the conference are, so I don't know who actually. Is Good Luck going to get all defensive team? Like he's set the Mountain West record for shot blocks in a season, and he did it like 4 games ago.
I think he's got to be one of the forwards.
Yeah. So I think Good Luck's it's going to be if Good Luck and Pat were to make the all defensive team, it's going to be really weird. UNLV could have 2 guys on that.
That's the problem. I don't see UNLV putting guys in the all defensive team when
they're 8th in the conference.
Yeah, it's a middling team, and I mean it hasn't been a spectacular defense. You've got like good defensive teams in the conference. I don't know. They might get one of those guys.
I would be okay if they gave all 5 to San Diego State, because when I look at like all Mountain West team, I don't think anybody on San Diego State deserves to be on the first team, but they're tied for first in the conference. They're probably going to finish second, maybe first. So I would have no problem with putting them all on the all defensive team. Like if they did that, I'd be happy with that actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's real. They're so far and away the best defensive team.
Does Pat have any chance at Freshman of the Year, or is that all David Kletz?
You think that he's a? You don't think Vaughn is in that mix?
I don't think he is. Like I just think missing, because what's he gonna end up missing? Six games?
I think it's seven, five already, seven. So I think it'll be seven.
Yeah, I think that's too many for him to miss. So I don't know. I guess those are the three guys that could potentially even win it: Collette, Vaughn, or McCall. I don't think Vaughn gets it just because he's going to miss seven games. And Collette's efficiency, the advanced stats love David Collette. Like, he has been awesome. His offensive rating compared to his defensive rating are tremendous.
He would get the vote from the UNLV voters, the UNLV media voters, if they were still allowed to vote for the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Because he was unstoppable against UNLV this year.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess Vaughn could win it, but I see it as Collette 1, McCall 2, and then, you know, Vaughn's kind of de facto 3, because there really is not another
player. And it only takes, you know, your performance in conference play into account. So, so Vaughn is out. If you only play, you know, half the season, he can't get that.
Yeah. And Pat's been good in conference play. Like, if it was a whole season award, it would definitely hurt Pat because he didn't play a whole lot early, but he's played a lot in conference play, so I think he has a chance, but it's still going to be Collette, I would assume, anyway. If it's not Collette, maybe something's wrong, but oh well. Pat McCaw's awesome. Everybody loves him. He's going to lead UNLV back to the Final Four, isn't he? Just say it, Mike.
I think you build around him, you'll be back in the tournament sooner rather than later.
Okay. Another thing. So I found a story from January from Bleacher Report. Jason King had talked to NBA scouts and basically got their opinion on a whole bunch of guys in college that were going to the NBA or could be going to the NBA. And one of the scouts, when talking about Rashad Vaughn, basically hated on Dave Rice, which is fairly typical, but he said Dave Rice doesn't have a game plan. Like, just straight up said, Dave Rice doesn't have a game plan. And I don't understand when people say that. Like, we've sort of talked about it before, you don't become a college coach, you don't become a Division I coach without some, like, form of game plan from game to game or calling plays. Like, if you want to, like,
I was actually talking to one of my former colleagues about this last night. I ran into an old editor of mine, Thomas and Mack, and I think people get game plan confused with identity sometimes. Because I feel like Rice, as you you like to point out, that they do run offensive plays, they have offensive sets that they like to run, and they have, you know, certain things that they're trying to do against certain defenses. But if I asked you, what is this team's offensive identity, what would you say?
They're trying to get Chris Wood to be good, and when he's not, they kind of don't know what to do unless it's Pat.
I don't think they have an offensive identity. I don't think they've had an offensive identity, and this is the third year I've covered the team. I don't think they've had an offensive identity where you can point to and say, like, you know, like with Michigan State, you would say, you know, they're tough, they're going to pound it down low, they're going to, you know, crash the offensive boards. If Duke's got a free flowing offense, they're going to look for three pointers, they're going to work it inside out, things like that. You know, UNLV doesn't really have, they're not a running team, they're not really a half court position team, they're not really a 3-point shooting team, they're not really a pick and roll team. What are they?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think identity wise, they don't have a great identity. That's a good point.
I think when people say they don't have a game plan or they don't run plays, that what they may mean is that overall, in the grand scheme of, you know, the team for the entire season, they don't really have an identity or something that you can point to as, you know, a particular strength, or, you know, this is what the offense is.
What should their identity be offensively?
I think that they should be a pick and roll team with Pat McCaw handling the ball. Just pick and roll from the top, from the side, let the bigs crash to the rim, put shooters around the outside. Basically, you know, in NBA offense, just let Pat McCaw get a ball screen, try and get into the lane. If he can get a big man with a lob or bouncing it to him to the rim or drawing defense and kicking it outside to, you know, Vaughn or Doolin or Cornish when those guys are healthy for three-pointers. I think that would be their best offense.
Yeah, I agree right now, especially with Vaughn out. They can't run enough ball screens for Pat McCall. If you look at the strengths of the team, Pat McCall's really good coming off ball screens. Okonobo's really good rolling to the basket off ball screens. Cornish and Doolin can be floor spacers shooting the ball wise. And then Chris Wood, his best offensive strength is catching from 12 or 15 feet away and attacking. You can have all of that in one play. Like, you can have Okonobo set McCall ball screen with Cornish and Doolin in the corner, and then have Wood hanging out like at the opposite elbow, and basically McCall just has to make the right read. And like, you can get all of that in one play. And to me, like, I agree, that should be their identity. As much Pat McCall ball screen and letting him make decisions as to either he's going to shoot, he's going to throw an alley-oop, or he's going to kick to a shooter, I think that is would be their best offense.
And I think on Saturday night, I think Doolin was a little bit better. You saw him a little bit more aggressive coming off screens. He got into the lane a couple times. He hit a couple short jumpers. It looked like he was, you know, actively trying to make things happen. But for most of the season, what we've seen is him, you know, coming around a screen and then just sort of flattening out, backing it out, setting up another screen, you know, running time off the clock.
It's been weird because, like, I went and watched some of his San Francisco stuff. That's what he did. He came off ball screens. That's why he scored 1,000 points at San Francisco. That's why he was so good there, is because he came off ball screens and looked to score. And if somebody cut him off, he passed it to a shooter. Like, that's what he did at San Francisco, and he hasn't done it here.
Yeah, I agree. It might be I don't know if the Mountain West is that big of a step up in terms of defense and athleticism from defenders, and maybe he just can't do it at this level or for whatever reason. But I think Pat McCall is the more effective guy for running those type of plays. When you see Cody Doolin, you know, come around a high screen and then just sort of back off and reset, and, you know, it takes another 7 to 10 seconds off the shot clock, you kind of, in the back of my mind, I know I'm thinking that, you know, probably would have been better off with Pat McCall, you know, running that play and trying to make something happen. And Doolin is a good enough shooter that, I mean, he can be a floor spacer. I mean, if you want to set him up on the other side and sort of let him spot up and knock down shots, I think that would work. But yeah, I think that should be their offensive identity. Maybe we'll see that more next year when McCaw has another year of experience in the system, and maybe they'll trust him more to, you know, give him the keys full time.
See, Mike, this is why I wanted to do the podcast with you, because there's so much when it comes to coaching and yelling about Dave Rice. There's so much just yelling, oh, he's a bad coach, or he doesn't do blank or whatever. There's very rarely like, hey, this would be something they could do that would work. Like, there's very rarely like, oh, they should be doing this. It's pretty much just, hey, you shouldn't do that. And that's something that annoys me. And that's sort of the whole, they don't have a game plan thing, which is completely, because like, If you watch the game against Arizona, they ran a simple play, but they ran a play for Chris Wood to just come off a screen, catch it at 15 foot, and drive. And it worked. It was simple, but they did it over and over. Arizona couldn't stop it. Wyoming, the game in Laramie, they lost the game, but Dave Rice drew up a play to take advantage of the way Wyoming played ball screens, and that's why Chris Wood was wide open the first 10 possessions of the game. Like, they have game plans. They run plays. And people that say they don't are foolish. Now, you're saying maybe they're conflating that with identity, which is, I agree with that. They don't really have, you know, from maybe on an individual game, they might have some sort of an identity, but as a season whole, they don't have it. But then, I don't know. I get annoyed when people just say, oh, they don't coach. And here's the thing. I will always defend a coach from people that say he doesn't call plays, because every coach is going to call plays. And then on the defensive side, they've held, like we've said it just earlier, they're not a good defensive team. Their defensive efficiency rating isn't good. But the last 2 weeks, Derek Marks had his least efficient game of Mountain West play against UNLV, and Larry Nance had his least efficient game of Mountain West play against UNLV, and I don't know what to do with that.
There's always the chance that it could be coincidence. It could be specific game planning. I don't know if you've had the chance to to look at those games again. But I mean, X's and O's wise, is there anything that they did to Nance? Or also Nance, you know, obviously coming off that illness.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know if there's anything specifically that they did to, you know, contain him, or if it was just a case of, you know, he hadn't played in 3 weeks, so now he's, you know, he's just gonna wait. He just wore down as the game went along, which, you know, is mono is just like a fatigue. It's just fatigue is a big issue with mono. Maybe he's just sort of wore down as the game went on. I don't know, but I mean, yeah, their performance against, you know, top players has been pretty good, as opposed to last year when that was something that they struggled with.
Like even DeLon Wright at Utah, who's like, I think he's one of Kim Pom's like five most efficient players in the country this year. He was awful against UNLV. Like, he did not have a good game. So UNLV's done it. Like, they've done a really good job against really good offensive players. Derek Marks, they switched screens, which took away Boise State's 3-point shooting and basically forced Marks to hit 2-point jump shots, which he actually does pretty, like, his 2-point jump shot percentage is like 45%. He does it pretty well, but he didn't do it against UNLV, and that's why they slowed down Marks, was because they just switched screens, and that's what they were going to do. Against Wyoming, and Rice talked about this afterwards, when they played in Laramie, they wanted to take away the 3-pointer, which meant they gave up, I think it was 8 dunks in that game, because they were having their big guys pulled away and they weren't wanting to help, and so that gave Nance and even Derek Cook like just open lanes to dunk the ball. Against, or here in Las Vegas, when Nance caught the ball, they would send another help defender. Like, Okonobo had a big swat on Larry Nance in the first half because he was coming over to help. And then when they ran their dribble handoff play, it's like a weave, dribble handoff, side pick and roll thing all at once. It's beautiful. UNLV just sagged off of it. Like, they didn't care. Like, they just kind of stayed 3 feet away, and they said, if you want to shoot a three over the top of that, knock yourself out. Wyoming didn't really do that. But what it prevented was it prevented those open lanes for Nance and Cook to roll to the basket and dunk it. So there was certainly an X's and O's things, but Larry Nance shot one shot in the second half, and it was with 90 seconds left, and it was a three. Like, I'd have to rewatch the second half, but I don't know what happened to him. Like, he wasn't a factor offensively. Josh Adams was tearing it up, but Nance didn't do anything in that second half. And it's bizarre to me that this team can have such bad defensive numbers, but yet, like, they do things and you're like, oh, like I watch things and I say, this is a team capable of good things defensively. Like, what they did to Marks, I watch that and I say, like, they can play good defense at times.
I guess the easiest thing to pin it on would be when you're playing, you know, four freshmen and you know, all these freshmen and sophomores, can they, even if you install, you know, the best game plan in the world, can they execute it consistently for, you know, 65 possessions, or are they going to do it for 55 possessions and then give up 10 easy shots, you know, when they have lapses or when they make mistakes? So I mean, that would probably be the simplest explanation for why they can play so well at times, but then for the overall scheme, not be that great of a defense. That would just be my first guess. But I don't know. It is odd. Especially because it was something they struggled with last year. Last year, you know, Jahi Carson came in and they knew they had to stop him, and he put up 40. Or, you know, they played New Mexico, and Hugh Greenwood was, like, the number one target, and, you know, he put up 25. So it was something they struggled with last year. You know, they burned them two times when he was the only guy, really, that they had to stop on Reno. So, I mean, it was something they couldn't do last year. Now it seems like they've sort of turned it around, and they are doing a better job this year, but it hasn't impacted their overall defensive play that much. So I don't have an answer.
They still can't guard guys one-on-one in the post. Like, all the big guy, well, I guess they did kind of slip down Nance, but, like, all the big guys have had big games against them in this conference. But, I don't know, it's weird to me, because
Okonobo is a good shot blocker, but Synergy does not like him as a post-up defender in one-on-one situations.
Yeah. Okay, Mountain West standings. UNLV's in seventh. They're two games behind Fresno. They do hold the tiebreaker with Fresno. But that means UNLV's got to win out. Fresno has to lose out. UNLV plays San Diego State at home. Then they go to San Jose State. So they're going to win at least one game. Fresno gets Air Force at home before finishing at Boise. So we're gonna know Wednesday if UNLV is the 6th or the 7th seed. If UNLV beats San Diego State and Fresno loses to Air Force, I think UNLV is gonna get this. I think they're gonna take care of it the last weekend. But if UNLV loses or Fresno beats Air Force, UNLV is guaranteed to not have a bye. I think they're gonna finish as the 7, which means they'll play either New Mexico, Air Force, or Nevada in the first round, and then it kind of sets up from there, depending on what who finishes 1 and who finishes 2.
So let's take the stance that they do finish 7th. Who do you like as a first-round matchup in that sort of play-in round between New Mexico, Air Force, and Nevada? Who do you think is the best matchup for UNLV?
It's New Mexico, and it's not really that close. What does New Mexico have that scares UNLV?
Nothing. How many straight games has New Mexico lost now?
Is it 8 now?
It's a pretty long losing streak.
Like, they don't have shooters. They have one guy that can shoot the ball from the 3-point range. Like, that's it. One guy that'll even do it now, and that's Greenwood. A Jet had a decent game, but he only scored like 13 points against UNLV the second time. So, like, he can get some offensive boards, and that can give UNLV some problems. But over the course of 40 minutes, like, a Jet's not going to beat you. They don't have a lot that scares you if you're UNLV. Nevada and Air Force aren't good teams, but A.J. West terrifies me if I'm UNLV. And Air Force's ability to shoot the ball scares me if I'm... Like both of those teams have something that I say, I don't really want to face that in the first day. New Mexico, like, nah, they don't have anything that I say, okay, that's something that really scares me.
Yeah, totally agree. Even though now that I'm looking at New Mexico's schedule, they have lost 8 in a row. They beat the last win was San Jose State, but before that, their last non-San Jose State win was at UNLV. So I don't know if that scares you a little bit. But I would agree. They're kind of rudderless at this point. I watch New Mexico. I don't see any particular thing that. Unless Hugh Greenwood goes off and hits 6 3-pointers again, I don't really see that much to be concerned about. I don't think they excel in any one particular area. Whereas, like you said, Nevada, we've seen them, or Nevada Reno, come in and beat UNLV with offensive rebounding, or we've seen Air Force be able to get hot from 3-point range. So I would say that New Mexico is probably the preferred opponent in that play-in game.
Second round for UNLV, assuming they get the 7, if UNLV won, they would be playing the 2 seed. Right now, that would be San Diego State. Could still be Colorado State. Could even be Utah State. There's some potential there. Could be Boise State. Who, like, of those teams, who would UNLV have the best chance at beating?
Might have to go Boise State. I mean, Boise State is in first, but I think UNLV is, despite the results against them this year, they got swept by Boise State, but it wasn't like they got blown out either time. Both games were close. I don't think UNLV played that well when they played them 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I think Utah State is troublesome with their shooting. And with Collette inside against a team that doesn't have good post defenders. I don't know. What do you think? I'm thinking that San Diego State, I want to see how this game goes this week.
It's Boise. Like, that's of those top four teams, Boise's the team UNLV can beat the easiest. Like you said, Utah State, Collette inside and shooters means that UNLV either has to stick to the shooters and play Collette one-on-one, which we've seen hasn't worked, or they have to help onto Collette and leave a shooter open, which we haven't necessarily seen that with Utah State so much, but we've seen in other games that hurt UNLV. Like, it's a bad matchup. Colorado State's the exact same thing with J.J. Avila and all of their shooters. I mean, Colorado State's got like 4 guys that can all shoot the ball. Stanton Kidd, Gian Clavel, Bayerano. Like, they've got guys that can shoot it. They're the same thing as Utah State in terms of a bad matchup on the defensive end for UNLV. San Diego State, I don't think, is an awful matchup. I just think they have a really good defense, and you could foreseeably have UNLV score like 32 points. Like, that could happen against San Diego State in a conference tournament game. But it's Boise State, and the reason is, what makes Boise State so good offensively is Mark's coming off ball screens, and Mark's either getting to the rim, pulling up for three, or hitting the guy who set the screen, Duncan or Webb, popping for an open three. Like, that's what they're good at. UNLV switches the screen. UNLV has good enough athletes that they don't have just an awful mismatch. That's, they can beat them. Like, they, UNLV's strategy is the best to stopping Derek Marks and Boise State. And UNLV, as long as they don't get Cody Doolin matched up on Marks, UNLV has the athletes to where Marks isn't just going to blow by you time after time for an open layup when he gets, a big guy on him. So Boise's who you want. Like, in that second round, if you're UNLV, like, if you need to, I would lose to San Jose State to get the 8 seed so I get Boise in the second round. I would do it.
I don't know if Dave Rice has. I know we both said that he wouldn't be on the hot seat until after next season at the earliest. But if they lose that final game to San Jose State, it might heat up a little sooner than that.
No, listen. Start Charles Rushman. Start Barry Chaney. Like, it would be like they're not going to beat Colorado State in the second round if that's who they have to play. They can beat Boise. Like, they might beat San Diego State, but to me, like, you're losing to San Jose State at the end of the year doesn't do anything besides, I guess, whatever. It embarrasses somebody. But if you start your walk-ons, you can say without verbally saying it, we're throwing this game, and just to get a worse seed and then therefore get a better matchup in the second round.
I will give you points for outside-the-box thinking, but I don't think that they will. I don't think they're dropping that game.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you beat San Jose State and lose in the first or second round of the Mountain West tournament, it doesn't matter. If you lose to San Jose State and manage to win the Mountain West tournament, holy hell, he saved the season somehow. And why? Because he lost to San Jose State on the last day of the regular season.
I don't know. I think if you lose to San Jose State and then you don't go on to win a tournament, that San Jose State loss defines your season more than any other loss that you may have had in the tournament or previously during it. I think that becomes the defining moment of your season. And
but
why
no, it doesn't
that,
matter.
Why do that?
Because you started Barry Chaney, so it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if you lose that game. Like, people, the idea of UNLV losing to San Jose State would freak people out, and it'd be like a bad headline. But in reality, there's nothing you really lose this season by losing to San Jose State.
Do you think UNLV's walk-ons are enough to lose to San Jose State?
Okay, that's a good point. And the other problem is you still have to play three scholarship guys.
You know, what they might have to do is you start Chaney and Rushman, and then you also start Danley Walker and Rashad Vaughn on crutches or in walking boots.
Like, yeah, start Barry Chaney, and he'd end up beating San Jose State by himself. Dave needs to start Barry Chaney just because it's San Jose State. Like, not even a tanking method. Like, he just put Chaney in the starting lineup. Like, just replace Kendrick for now with Chaney in the starting lineup against San Jose State. That's what he needs to do.
We may see Chaney against San Diego State for senior night. He's a senior, right?
I don't know. I don't. He might be only a junior. I think Rushman's a redshirt.
Rushman's
junior.
A redshirt sophomore.
Oh, really?
A redshirt walk-on, which is strange enough. But I want to put that San Jose State game in the win column. I think.
Let's see. No, Chaney's a junior.
Okay, so then you won't see him against San Diego State. But I think the more importantly than maybe than their seeding and where they're positioned in the tournament. The more important thing is going to be which Chris Wood they get for those 4 days.
Yeah. That's and like, you know, we saw last night Chris Wood's not going to be the same guy 4 straight games. Like, he's not going to be the same guy in 2 straight halves. Like, you don't, it's amazing. It's just amazing. And to me, I can't, like, when I think about it, Chris Wood, I can't blame it on Dave Rice, because that first half against Wyoming, he has no points. three rebounds. The reason Dwayne Morgan, like, had as good of a half, they ran two times a set play for Dwayne Morgan that they usually run for Chris Wood, and Dwayne Morgan scored. Like, to me, it's not coaching or anything. It's just Chris Wood is, I don't know what he is, because you don't go 0 points and three rebounds to 10 points and 10 rebounds in the second half because of something to do with coaching. Like, it's just Chris Wood is weird.
Yeah, I don't know. He's definitely become a polarizing player for the fan base, and I think even for the media as the season has gone on. You've got some people who take every opportunity to point out, you know, when he's not playing hard or when he doesn't hustle on a play. But then you've got other guys who just point to, you know, the numbers that say, like, this guy is indispensable for the team. He's absolutely indispensable. I tend to fall to the latter category. You just look at – I'm a Chris Wood defender. He doubled – even with considering the poor start against Wyoming, double figures in the last 11 games, six double-doubles. I mean, he's been – since he had that midseason blip where he you know, San Jose State, Boise State, San Diego State, where he – that three-game stretch where he didn't play well, he's pretty much been the same guy every night, you know, 17, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 50% shooting.
It's
like, not always fun to watch. I mean, there are going to be plays where, you know, he's arguing with a referee while the rest of the team gets back on defense. There are going to be plays where, you know, he gets the ball and instead of driving it to the hoop, he takes a quick three pointer. We haven't seen a lot of that this year, but he's mixed in a few of those. There are going to be plays that are frustrating, but I think that he's still a sophomore. This is his first year being like the man on a team, you know, two ways. That's a lot of responsibility. I think for the most part, he's lived up to it. There are moments like last night, I mean, against Wyoming on Saturday when he didn't play well in the first half, Coach Rice benched him for the start of the second half, which is the move. That's what he should have done. And Chris Wood, to his credit, I would say, came out. He took it well. He didn't pout. He came out and he played harder. And, you know, he kicked ass in the second half. I mean, yeah, he had a blip in the first half. He was disciplined for it. And he came out and played better.
What did he end up with? 10 defensive rebounds in the second half?
He had, 10 defensive rebounds in the second half.
Like, he single-handedly cleaned up the defensive
I think the team had 13 defensive rebounds, and he had 10 of them in the second half.
Like, it's just, I don't know, it's incredible how good he is, but then how just, like, absent it is. Like, it's like he doesn't show up for 10 minutes. And, you know, the San Diego State game's his worst, you know, is the biggest example of that, where it was 2 points, three rebounds against San Diego State.
Well, he took four shots in 32 minutes. Like, that's a no-show.
And if I think it was the last 3 minutes, 4 minutes of the game, Dave Rice put him on the bench. And just, like, he brought in Jalon Kendrick for the last 3 minutes of the game. Kendrick, like, didn't take a shot the whole game because Chris Wood just wasn't doing anything. So it's, I don't know, it's just, I don't know what to do with Chris Wood. And he's awesome, but not all the time. A lot of the times he's like, okay, he's just another guy out there. But he is, like, this team isn't that good, but there's so many things that I enjoy watching about this team. And there's so many things that I'm like, holy hell, that was awesome. Like, it's so weird to me that they're barely above 500, but I love to watch Pat McCall. When Chris Wood is rolling, Chris Wood is fantastic. Okonobo blocking shots is awesome. Rashad Vaughn, when he was healthy, was a lot of, like, there's so much of this team that's fun to watch offensively, but it's weird because they suck.
No, I think that's a lot of the people, when people have criticism of Dave Rice, I think that the problem they have is that individually, it seems like they have a lot of very intriguing pieces. Like, you know, if you were to line up these players against other Mountain West teams, you would think that UNLV is, you know, the more talented team. They've got two guys who are going to be in the NBA off this roster, at least, Chris Wood and Rashad Vaughn. So you've got two NBA players. You've got, you know, Patrick McCaw just breaking through this year. You've got Okonobo, who's all these guys that can fill roles and have these individual skills, and yet team-wise, it seems like they're still middle of the pack.
Are we being fooled? Like, I feel like for a team that's just barely over 500, and they're under 500 in conference play, there's a ton of optimism. And, like, there's a ton of people, like, there's a lot of people, like, media, fans, coaches, whoever, that's like, they're good, that think this team's going to be fine next year and the year after that because of how good Pat McCaw's been, because we've seen flashes from a lot of guys that it's like, okay, that's a good piece. Are we being fooled, though? Like, this team's not going to be really good next year, are they?
I don't think that they're going to be, you know, I don't think that they're going to, you know, start the season, you know, 15-0 next year. I think a lot of people are sort of, I don't think the reality has set in that Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood are gone next year. Like, that's just a huge chunk of this team is just, you're going to have to replace. And I know that, you know, Doolin has also gone. So it's like, they've got Seegers coming in. They've got Ben Carter coming in. Is that going to be enough to replace Chris Wood and Rashad Vaughn? I don't know. Is Pat McCaw going to take that much of a leap forward to make this a good team? Dwayne Morgan is a guy who can improve. I don't think the reality is set in yet that both of those guys are more than likely gone, and that you're going to have to replace so much of the team.
Yeah, and with Pat, the thing is, when guys are asked to take on a bigger offensive role, especially shooting the ball more, and basically as your usage rate goes up, your effective field goal percentage goes down. Mm-hmm. Is kind of how it happens. Now, Derek Marks blew that theory out of the water this year. Like, his usage rate skyrocketed and he's shooting the ball better than he ever has. And there's some other players that it's happened for. But for the most part, when you're asked to do more, especially shoot more, you're less effective. And so if Pat McCaw is asked, I think his average right now is 8.5 shots per game. It might have gone up a little bit since the last two or three, but it's like 8.5, 9 shots a game. If he's asked to take 13, 14 next year, he's not going to shoot it as well. Like, there's a good chance he shoots it worse next year, which kind of ends up hurting your offense if that's what you're asking him to do.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at his game log, the last 5 games, McCaw has double-figure shot attempts. It's going to be hard for him to be the same kind of efficient guy next year. I know that he's doing a pretty good job now filling in for Vaughn. He's gotten hot from three-point range. But yeah, it's a different situation when you're asking a guy to, you know, be that number one guy and be the guy that really drives your offense, which is as good as Pat McCaw has been. I would say that, you know, Chris Wood is probably still the leader on that offense, the guy that, you know, they sort of look toward to put up the numbers every night. So it's going to be a different team. It's going to be a very different team. It's going to be a super young team again. They do have some highly touted recruits coming in. Jalen Poyser, Derek Jones, committed. Jones hasn't signed yet, but he's committed. But, I mean, you can't really count on them to be instant contributors. Like we saw with freshmen are hit and miss. We saw that with, you know, McCaw was a hit, who's been great this year, and Dwayne Morgan was sort of a guy who wasn't ready to contribute as a freshman. So you don't know what you're going to get from freshmen. So just losing Vaughn and Wood is going to be really, really hard to overcome.
The other thing that makes me optimistic when I look, okay, like this team might be pretty good next year, is except the Utah State game, they haven't gotten blown out. Like, they've lost games in the final 2 minutes or in overtime. Like, by the end of this season, we're going to be able to count it up, and it's going to be like UNLV was 15 points away from being like 12-6 in conference play. Like, we're going to be able to say that at the end of the year. So it's not like they've gotten blown out very often. It happened a couple times in non-conference. It happened at Utah State. But for the most part, there hasn't been, like, a thing to point at and say, oh my God, they just sucked at everything in that game. Or they sucked at everything for 4 straight games. They've been good at things in most games. Like Boise State, they did excellent against Derek Marks. Wyoming at Laramie, they were excellent on offense. They just haven't put together a complete game. So, like, to me, that's a positive thing, that you're losing games by 3 points and not 15 points.
If you would attribute those, you know, all those close losses to experience, which I know a lot of people do, is that something that you would necessarily expect to change next year when the team is just going to be just as young and just as inexperienced?
No, not necessarily. I mean, because hell, they might even be younger, right? Like, because Doolin and Kendrick have played college basketball for like 17 years. Like, Seager's
a 1 year guy. He'll be a senior, so he'll have 1 year. Carter will be a redshirt junior, so he'll have 3 years of college experience. This will be his fourth year. Seager's will be a fifth year guy, and then everyone else that they bring in as of now will be true freshmen. You know,
if they're going to be an NCAA tournament team next year, Pat McCall, Dwayne Morgan, all the freshmen this year, besides Vaughn, who we're assuming is gone, they all have to take a decent-sized step forward. Like, Good Luck Okonobo has to be a guy that you can get 10 points on, like, 3 of 5, 4 of 5 shooters.
I want to see Okonobo, I would say, even more than scoring, rebounding. Like, who's going to...
Yeah.
Wood is the only guy on the team who rebounds. How are they going to replace those rebounds? They weren't a good rebounding team, really, this year. It killed them in a lot of games. So losing Woods rebounding, Okonobo and Carter are really going to have to be the guys that like clean up on that end. Those guys are going to have to take huge steps forward. I think Morgan was probably the guy who has the most potential to take a big step forward. I think he's the guy that if UNLV is going to be a tournament caliber team next year, I think you can pretty much count on Pat McCaw to be good. But I think Morgan is the guy who is a bit of a question mark, but they need him to take a huge step forward.
And then I think even if you get those guys a step forward, somebody that's new, whether it's one of the transfers, Seegers or Carter, or whether it's one of the freshmen, or if they get Zimmerman, somebody still has to come in and be a scorer. Like, somebody's still got to come in and be essentially a star. Like, because nobody that is on this team now, whether it's redshirt guys or on the roster now, are going to be able to do what Rashad Vaughn did in terms of scoring next year. Like Pat McCall could, but Pat McCall's been kind of doing it this season. Like, that, they're still going to be missing that guy on the wing that they can give the ball to and he can score. Like, I don't see that next year. So even if you get those guys to step up, you're still one really good player away from being, okay, this is an NCAA tournament team.
I agree. No, I agree, I don't think that reality has set in for a lot of the fans yet, who may assume that, you know, one of those guys is leaving, and one of those guys might come back. But if both of them leave, which I think is probably going to happen, then, the next year's team is – there's a lot of pieces that, as of right now, are still missing and have yet to be put into place.
All right, they're going to beat San Diego State?
I would say no. I don't think so. I think San Diego State is rolling pretty well right now.
I think KenPom has San Diego State winning by 2, so the spread will probably be SDSU -3 or something like that to open.
Close game. I mean, UNLV usually plays San Diego State close. Those games are usually tight, from my experience.
I don't think UNLV wins. I think with like 4 players and San Diego State playing as aggressive as they do on D. I mean, we saw UNLV get tired and fall apart the last few minutes at San Diego State when they had a much healthier team, so I don't think they last the full 40 minutes again. Does San Diego State travel well for the Mountain West tournament?
In terms of fans?
Yeah.
It's tough. I don't think New Mexico was the only team that really made an impression in terms of how well they traveled. They usually have a pretty strong contingency. San Diego State, nothing, I wouldn't say spectacular in terms of...
So there's going to be 5 people at the Mountain West tournament, right? Because San Diego State... New Mexico and UNLV both suck, so there's only going to be 5 people there.
Yeah, San Diego State's probably going to have the biggest fan base there, I would guess. But
Boise fans need to saddle up and come on down to Vegas, because Derek Marks is fun.
It's almost that time of year again when you start to see the UNLV home court advantage argument for the Mountain West tournament.
Do people complain a lot about
yes,
that?
Yes, really? It's annoying, yes. I mean... It's,
would they be happier if they, like, would other teams be happier if they moved it out of the Thomas and Mack into, like, a casino arena or something?
Maybe, but then it's not, then, but the change is that, it doesn't change much, because UNLV, you're still playing in your home city. It's not like they play on the Thomas, they bring in the Mountain West floor, so they change out the floor, the actual floorboards for the game. They change out like all the signage. It's the fans. It's not like UNLV has their normal student section. It's they usually put the UNLV fans way back in the UNLV section is designated like way back in the back section. So it's not like there's much of a home court advantage. I mean, the only thing they gain is, I guess, familiarity with the locker room and with the arena itself. So I don't know. I never understood that argument.
I mean, yeah, it's something for people to complain about, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. I
like complaining as much as the next guy, but that one never really bothered me.
You got to explain something. Why don't you like people that back into parking spots?
A head-on parking spot. I'm not talking about parallel parking. I'm talking about if you're in a parking lot and you're following behind someone and they see a parking spot and they're going to take it. Fine. You pull in head first. It takes 2 seconds. And then when you back out later, it takes 2 seconds. But when people back into a parking space, it takes so much longer. It adds so much time unnecessarily to the process. Backing into a spot it's so much time, and it doesn't change your overall gameplay. You're still backing in once, and then pulling head first once. So if you just go in head first the first time and then back out the second time, you're still doing both motions, but it's a much much compressed time frame. Am I explaining this right?
I know what you're saying. Like you're just mad because you've had to sit and watch people back in, and it wasted your time.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not saying my time is more valuable than anyone else's, but I mean, I have a finite amount of time on this planet. I don't want to watch someone, take 6 attempts to back into a spot when you can just pull in head first and then back out of it later and save everyone a bunch of time.
See, what the best thing to do is you got to have a parking lot where there's spaces next to each other and you can just pull straight through one into the other one.
That's good.
And that way you get to pull in head first and leave head first.
Yeah, that's the holy grail. But I need someone to explain to me what is the benefit of backing into a parking space. I don't understand it.
You might have a situation where you've got one guy in a big truck crowding the line, and if you pull in the head first, you're going to have a tough time getting out of your driver's door. But if you back in, your driver's door will be on the opposite side. You can get out easy.
That seems like a pretty specific scenario. I think I feel like people who back in just do it as a general philosophy.
And it's, yes, they
because
do.
Because they think they that, oh, I'll be this way I won't have to back out later when I get out of the store. But hey, guess what? You're backing in now. Like, you're not saving yourself a back-in, because you're doing it now, and it's much harder to back into a space than it is to back out of a space. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Backing out of a space takes 5 seconds. Backing into a space takes 5 minutes.
There's much more space when you back out.
Yes.
Than when you back in, because you just got the little, okay. I understand. It's just, I've seen you tweet about it twice, like, this basketball season, so it's something.
It's important to me.
It must be. Yeah, you're passionate about it, which is, it's strange to be that passionate about it. Like, I understand where you're coming from. I understand your viewpoint. I just don't share your fervor in this anger.
I just want someone to explain to me why they think that it's a better method than the one that everyone else on the planet subscribes to. But.
Okay, I'll have to think of something that irrationally annoys me and let you know next time.
Okay.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But I'm sure there's something.
Find something that annoys you, and then I'll take the other side. Because I think a more entertaining podcast would be if we disagreed more and had more fighting on the podcast.
I'll yell about Chris Wood at you. I'll go watch stuff, and I'll just start telling you why he's terrible.
Okay, and I'll come back with why he's good.
Okay, I think I'll lose that, though.
Yeah, we could do that next week.
Okay, sounds good. All right. This has been the Towel Boys. He's Mike Grabala over at RunRevs.com. I'm Tyler Bischoff here at Mountain West Connection. Thanks for tuning in.